learned that death is not the end. I can help you, help you, help you, help you.
Hey, Escape from Plan A listeners, welcome back. This is Chris along with Adam. Hey, what's up, Adam?
What's up? What's up?
And this is kind of a impromptu episode because something really big has happened. And remember in 2018, we did essentially the same thing at the end when Korea beat Germany.
And yes, I remember.
Tina and me, yeah, we had this big celebratory episode. I will confess, I did not expect to do an episode like that again because, so just to recap things, the group stages of the World Cup have just ended and Korea, against all odds, has made it to the knockout stages. And
yeah, I mean, really against all odds. I mean,
yeah,
they had to have multiple things happen and they happened.
Yeah, and it wasn't so much that I thought it would be impossible to beat a Portugal B team, but it was just sort of like, cause like then you had the other game that had to go our way. And it was just like,
yeah,
it's like an intricate, like machinery that had to just, you know, all the gears had to fit correctly and spin at
exactly
the right time. And it somehow happened to the point where I was not expecting much, from this game. And I just thought, you know, just put up a good fight. But I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. So I'm actually in Korea right now. I've been here for the last 3 weeks, and actually my flight is in like 9 hours. So I just thought, and I don't expect to sleep too much. The U.S. versus Netherlands game is on right now. Adam, are you watching that?
I am. I'm watching it on my on another tab, and
yeah, apparently
the Netherlands scored.
Yeah, so, Memphis Depay or Depay, however you pronounce that.
Memphis Depay, I guess. Yeah,
yeah, he scored in 10 minutes. We'll see how that goes, but
yeah,
I don't expect to sleep too much tonight. So I thought, hey, might as well get the pod up while I'm still in Korea. Nice. And, you know, the good vibes are still vibing. So anyway, okay, regardless, what have you thought of the World Cup so far?
It's been exciting. The games have been, I guess, in quality, quote unquote. I don't know if they've been the highest quality, but they've been really exciting. Like the results and like there have been a lot of upsets. A lot of big name teams didn't make it out of the group. So I think as like a tournament and as entertainment, it's been a lot of fun to watch.
For sure.
And just follow too.
I can't remember the last time we're at the third group stage that it seemed like every team has something to play for. There were very few teams that were outright eliminated and very few teams that were actually
like outright into the next round.
Yeah. Not only that, but even assured of, say, first place.
Right, right.
So you had like even a team like Spain, which had started off so well, winning 7-0, in the end, ended up with only 4 points in second place because they lost to Japan.
That's right.
We can talk about that as well. But okay, let's I want to talk about my reaction to the Korea win, because as I said, I am not somebody who likes to watch Korea matches in public, because I just get, the more personally I'm invested in a match, the less I want to go out in public, because there all the anxiety gets compounded by being in a public place. So, I watch a lot of Tottenham matches in bars and stuff like that, but that's because, you know, as much as I like the team, I don't feel like anything exceptionally.
It's still just a club, right?
Yeah, it's a club. It's based in London, a city I've never been in, that I have no connection to. And you know, I love watching Sonny, and I have a lot of you know, players I really like on the team, but it doesn't strike at me on a personal level. That's not the same with the Korean national team. So yes, with that, I, like, for example, 2018, when you're playing Germany, I mean, this was because of the time difference. It's not like I could have gone out to a bar or anything, but at work, when it was happening, it was like some Korean coworkers had organized a watch party.
Oh, nice!
And I was thinking, God, fuck no, I'm not going to that. Especially since I thought we were in for a historic beatdown because we were playing so badly in that tournament. And Germany needed not only a win but like a pretty big win to ensure, I think, passage. Like, why would I set myself up for that kind of vicarious public humiliation? So I just kind of secretly watched in my office. But this time around, for some reason, like the first game versus Uruguay, I thought, you know what? I'm in Korea. Why don't I go and, you know, go out? Because I was also meeting up with a friend, actually a friend we know through the magazine podcast, Nate, who happened to be in Seoul at the same time. I met up with him, had dinner, and then we went to a bar and watched the Korea-Uruguay match, which ended in a pretty tense 0-0 draw. But
yeah, I have to say, you have to go to the game if you're in Seoul. Like, I mean, I think you would have been upset, or I would have been a little disappointed if you didn't go out while you're there, you know?
All right, so for the Uruguay match, I went out, and it was... And I felt kind of fine. I was like, okay, it was nice that it ended up in a draw, but if it hadn't, I don't think I would have been that like devastated or anything like that. And then for the Ghana match, I just watched it at home because it was, I forgot what time it was here, but it was also like very rainy that day. I met up with a friend for dinner, but then she couldn't. It was too late for her to stay out. I think it was at like...
Right. The times are weird.
Yeah. It was at midnight. It wasn't at 4 a.m. because the games would be at like 7, 10. Actually, it might have been at 10.
Fuck. Yeah.
Wait. Oh, did they score? Netherlands?
They just gave up. Oh, okay. They just gave up a really bad turnover and then...
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
They're still attacking.
So, okay, so Ghana, anyway. I watched that at home and that was... That was tense, and it was the because we started.
Didn't Korea lose?
Yeah, we lost that game, and we started that game off so well, but then Ghana like struck pretty quickly with two goals, and it started giving me shades of I don't know if you remember the Algeria match in the 2014 World Cup that Korea played, which we lost 4-2.
I don't remember that game, no.
Okay. So the circumstances were somewhat similar because in 2014, Korea had drawn 1-1 with Russia, and we were cautiously optimistic. And then we're playing Algeria, which is okay. They're like a pretty good team, but you know what? I think we're kind of on their level, and maybe we could get a good result. But then Algeria just like came out of the gates with just full... they were like determined to win in like the first 20 minutes. And they scored like two goals or something, and by then... We were just completely distraught. This kind of didn't happen like that because we were dominating for the first 20 minutes, but then these two quick goals happened. And I was just thinking, oh my God, we're not going to like lose 4-0 to Ghana, are we? And then I was, and at halftime, I was sincerely wondering, are we even going to score a goal in this tournament? I thought, because we had qualified like pretty comfortably. I think it was our most successful campaign in quite a while.
This Korea team is better than the 2014 team.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, 2018 team.
Yeah, and I know we had a tough group, but I'm like, we can at least put up a fight against Ghana, right? I mean, and then second half comes around, and then Cho Kyu-sung, whom I want to talk about later, he's like the new like hot guy, I guess, at the World Cup.
Yeah.
And because but then he scores these like two amazing goals. In like 2 minutes, he's just completely dominating.
Very
headers.
Important goals too, because we'll talk about all the numbers and stuff that Korea sort of had that allowed us to go through.
Right. And we tied up the game, and I'm like, oh my God, like, hey, I'm so glad I didn't lose faith. But then I think, you know, the like delirium after the second goal had hardly worn off when Ghana scores the winner. And that was just like, that was very, you know, disappointing. And yeah. I remember like going to bed, like almost just like haunted by it. And this had just happened after Japan had lost to Costa Rica.
Right.
And that teams, also right. was so, it's like, you know, Costa, I mean, that's already pretty bad. But I'm like, I wouldn't have thought that was so bad if Japan hadn't beaten Germany in the first match. I'm like, what was all that for? If you're going to blow it to Costa Rica, now you got to play Spain.
And they didn't just like lose like 1-0. They lost 3-0.
Who?
Japan, right?
To whom?
To Costa Rica.
No, or it
was that another team? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Anyway, I thought they had lost. Like,
it was a late goal. I didn't watch it. I was out having dinner with my cousin. And I thought, like, no way they would lose. Maybe it'd be very disappointing to get a 0-0 draw. But I'm like, I can't believe they lost it. They totally blew it. And the kind of optimism that was surrounding, like, you know, the Asian teams, both in terms of juggernaut
was waning.
And also the Asia Football Confederation. Because I heard people get kind of confused when we were celebrating, like, oh, Australia made it as an Asian team. They're like, they're not Asian. And I think what people were more happy about was the fact that, like, the AFC teams are doing well, which means the conference itself gets more respect and all that. It's not quite Asian as like a racial or geographic thing. Although, you know, we can actually want to talk about that a bit as well. So, you know, I go to bed and I'm just like, and this is like, it started off so well and now it's going to be pretty bad World Cup, it looks like, not only for Korea but for Asian teams. And oh God, like, it's going to be another 4 years before any we can hope for anything better. I was thinking, oh God damn, the last time Korea made it to the knockouts was 2010. It's going to be, if we don't get another chance until 2026, it'll have been almost 20 years.
Yeah. And, yeah.
And things like that were just kind of like weighing on me. And then, what is it? And then the Portugal game is coming. And actually, part of me kind of wanted to go out to see it, but it was also kind of late. And it was during like my second last night here. My parents wanted to watch it with me. And
so you
all
just
that.
Stayed home with your
family? So yeah, I stayed home and watched it. And I was strangely calm about this. And I was thinking, you know what? I've kind of come to terms with the fact that we're not going to probably do well. And I think Japan making it with that shock win over Spain, and, you know, also seeing the other AFC teams like Iran and to a much lesser extent Australia do well. I was thinking, you know what? It's okay. Like, Korea, you know what? Let's just put up a good fight and that will be good enough. And then Portugal scores in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, you know what? But you know what? Actually, I think that ended up helping us really a lot.
It woke us up. I mean,
it woke us up and put them to sleep. Because this was definitely not their A team. You know, Bruno wasn't playing. No. Bernardo Silva wasn't playing. João Felix wasn't playing.
It was definitely their B side for sure.
Who's their center back? The guy who plays for City. His name escapes me for a second. I mean, they did have like some, you know, decent players, but there was clearly a B squad. Wait, whoa, why was I bringing that up? Could you edit this part out? I kind of lost my train of thought.
Well, I think you were just saying that, like, you know, you were at home with your parents watching this, you were calm, but like, they score really quickly.
Oh yeah. And so, it's their B team and, so they're up and they're like, okay, we know we're already through. And even with a draw, we're guaranteed to be first. So
if you're Portugal,
if you're Portugal. Yeah. So I think the team's a little bit more disjointed. It's not quite the first team. Although you could argue that since the B team, they're hungrier to prove themselves. But so I think that it put them in the perfect spot to just be like, okay, we did our job. maybe you know, Cristiano was just going to try to pad his stats. But other than that, I think the team was like, okay, we just have to write this out. Whereas Korea now had, you know, and I'm sure you could, you know, this. You remember those, like, when Tottenham has that horrible tendency, more especially in the Mourinho era, where we score too early and we just spend the rest of the game defending. And we're like, oh God. And we always had this dread when we score too early. I think that's kind of what happened with Portugal. And yeah, so then Korea played really well for like the next 20 minutes. We were very calm. And I think the Ghana match really helped because we're like, okay, we know we can come back.
Right, Portugal B team, like, you don't panic. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that scary. You know, like, if you do it against Ghana, we can do it against this Portugal B team. So we kept at it. Kim Jin-soo actually scored a goal, but then that was disallowed because of offside. And I felt very comfortable that we would probably score again. And we did. Kim Young-kwon, who's the guy who actually scored the winner against Germany in 2018, now at 2 World Cup goals, is up there as some of our leading World Cup goal scorers as a center back.
That's true.
Which is quite impressive. So then it's tied at 1-1. But at this point, I think Uruguay had gone up or was about to go up 2-0 on Ghana.
I think they already were. Yeah. But either way, they had scored a couple of goals, right?
Yeah, and
at least
based
one.
On the tiebreaker rules, if Uruguay went up 3-0, then it wouldn't be enough for us to merely beat Portugal. We'd have to win by 2 goals, I believe, or something like that. Which,
yes, we would have to win by 2. I think that's true, because we were tied on every other tiebreaker.
Right. So it's like within 30 minutes, Uruguay's up 2-0. Ghana had actually missed a penalty before Uruguay went up 1-0. And that was psychologically devastating for them.
That really deflated them, I think.
Apparently the guy who took it, Andre Ayew, was the only player who had been on that 2010 squad.
Oof.
On Ghana. So he was not only one of their most senior members, but he was like the link to that infamous 2010 match, which, for listeners, I'll just go quick rundown. I'm guessing if you're listening to this episode, you kind of know about the World Cup, but the quarterfinals of the 2020 South Africa World Cup, Ghana played Uruguay. Ghana was carrying essentially the hopes of the entire African continent as the last remaining African country. They went up 1-0 on Uruguay, then Uruguay tied it, and they were in extra time. And it was pretty much in the last second. Ghana was about to score a goal, but then Luis Suarez clears it from the line using his hands. So he gets red carded, and then Ghana gets a penalty, but Asamoah Gyan misses the penalty, and then Ghana loses the shootout after. And, you know, I think people say, like, oh, it's because, like, Luis Suarez, like, celebrated and all that. But I think what Ghana, and I understand this, is that the rules at that point, it completely rewarded Luis Suarez. There was no downside to what he did. People are like, oh, he was punished because he got red carded. Well, he would have been eliminated anyway. So that's not a penalty at all. Because if he did nothing, he's not playing the next game anyway because Uruguay's out. So him handling the ball, that's no sacrifice on his part. And then, preventing a sure goal into giving a penalty, which on average goes in about 3/4 at a time, is still a downgrade. So,
yeah.
So Ghana was just in this position where, like, the so-called justice for the thing that had been done against them was clearly in favor of the, infringing party. So, I get why they're mad. And this was their chance to kind of avenge it. And, within 20 minutes, it's like PTSD. The recurrence of the nightmare happens.
Yeah.
And then, boom, 30 minutes. Uruguay's up 2-0. Game's pretty much over. And I'm also thinking, oh, God, they're up 2-0. Even if I think we can maybe win this game 2-1. I don't think we can win 3-1. And Uruguay's going to score at least 3, it seemed like. Maybe our only hope was Ghana would put in a few. But then there's the risk that Ghana gets a draw, in which case I think they would be through and would not be good for us. I'm like, and I was just thinking, you know what? Let's just enjoy this. At least we drew. Maybe Sonamin can put in a pretty good performance and go out on a high, because he had been under a lot of criticism and stress, you know, despite the fact that he's playing injured.
Yeah, that's with that sick mask.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he looks good in that mask. And then I'm just watching the second half, and like Portugal, once they took out Cristiano, they started playing much better.
Cristiano Ronaldo at this point is not very good, honestly.
I mean, yeah, we all pretty kind of knew that. But I thought, yeah, you know what, but that's at the kind of Premier League level, you know, Champions League level. Yeah. If he's playing, you know, Korea, I still thought he could do well. But, you know, he was pretty bad. He was offside like 90% of the time. And like the one chance he had, he badly missed a header.
He really, yeah, he fucked it up.
Right. And then once he got taken off and they brought in some younger players, they were pretty much controlling the game for pretty much, I think, the last 15 to 20 minutes, to the point where I was getting annoyed, because I'm thinking, it really, like, a draw does us no good. Why don't you go for it? What have you to lose?
Yeah, push more.
Yeah, because are you really playing for that point so you can say, oh, at least we got 2 points instead of one in the group stage? Like, who cares? Just go for it. Of course.
And, yeah, because if they score another goal and you lose, then you're out. If you just have a draw, you're out.
Yeah.
So, like, go for it.
Yeah, you know? But little did I know that this was all part of the plan, or maybe it wasn't, and this was all a kind of magical coincidence. But in the 90th minute, they got a corner kick, Portugal. And I think it was actually their own player, or whatever. It was a contested header, I think, between one of our players and theirs. And it just shoots out on the like kind of the right hand channel, and Son Heung-min is like the first player to it, and it's just him against like the two center backs, I think, and everyone else is behind him, and he's like going down by himself, and I'm thinking, oh, you know what, but you know, Son Heung-min has had these moments where he's had the ball and he's carried it, but then everyone swarms him and he just has no one to pass to, or he takes a half second too late and stuff. So I'm like, you know, not getting my hopes up too much, but I'm like, he's like doing, and then he draws in like pretty much over half the Portuguese team.
He drew
team.
In like seven of the Portuguese players.
There is a shot of him in like seven white shirts surrounding him. I honestly thought it was photoshopped. I thought, oh, you
I
know
did
what?
Too. I did too.
Yeah, they just cloned a bunch of white shirts and whatever. But no, I watched the video clip. It really was him surrounded by like seven players. He nutmegs, I think. Dalot, whatever his name is, the United player, and perfect pass to Hwang Hee-chan.
Perfect timing. I mean, when I watched it in real time, I thought like there was a chance that he was offside because it was that close.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know Hwang Hee-chan, perfect finish. I mean, such.
Yeah.
For Hwang Hee-chan, not only has been injured and not really played much of this World Cup, he hasn't played much in the Premier League. He's been benched most games. He's been dealing with an injury, and just and he plays for a team that just like has terrible offense, the Wolverhampton Wolves. For him to just immediately come on and make a, and he was like weaving and bullying his way whenever he got the ball. Instant.
Fuck! They scored a second.
All right. Well, good job, United States. See, that's
the same type of play. The same type of play too. Like,
that's how magnanimous.
God fucking damn it.
I'm feeling. I sincerely wish that the U.S. Did well against the Netherlands, which, you know, me and the American team, you know, that's quite rare. But looks like you know what, they might come back. You never know. But looks like the Netherlands are gonna make it through. But anyway, so I'm watching it, and my parents are going crazy. And I don't know if this makes me an extreme pessimist, but my immediate reaction was, like, let's all calm down, because if Uruguay scores, all this is for nothing. Well, not for nothing. I mean, I'm glad Sonny and Hwang had a great moment, you know, and that will always live on. But it's, to me, it'd be worse to suddenly get our hopes up only for them to be dashed. That's what really hurt me about Ghana. It was not that we lost. It was that for a brief moment, we had this beautiful, legendary comeback in the cards. Even if it was just a draw, it would have been so satisfying. But to have tasted that for a moment, only to lose it at the end, that's what really hurt.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah, because the Korea game ended like a few minutes before the Uruguay-Ghana game. So
about 10-ish minutes earlier. And I'm thinking, remember the, I mean, I'm sure you know, the when Manchester City won its first title kind of in the Premier League era?
Yeah.
This felt like eerily similar to that, because I remember watching that game and, you know, Manchester United beat, I think it was Sunderland or Stoke. I think it was Sunderland. And you see the players, they're like, we did our job. Now we got to find out what happened in the other game. And they're just kind of like, you know, milling about in the middle of the field. And then a few minutes later, Sergio Aguero scores arguably the most famous goal in Premier League history. And I was like, this could be the World Cup version of that. And I would have rather just lost or not. I've just, you know, drawn like 1-1. Okay.
To have it sort of in grasp and then like have it taken away by other forces, right? That you can't control.
That was what I was drinking, which is why I honestly did not celebrate the Hwang Hee-chan goal that much. So I was just like, you know, athletes when, like I see this in soccer sometimes when they like in a big important game, they like score an early goal and then the guy just like, he does a calm down thing to everyone and they're like, let's get back to business. I was like that guy, like, let's calm down. The more important thing actually right now is now Uruguay. I wasn't really scared that Portugal would score, because I think by that point they didn't care that much. They're like, oh, crap. Yeah. We would have rather won, but let's just not get injured or something. So, you know, the rest of the time goes off, and then I'm not even celebrating when Korea wins. In fact, when Sonny and all the players, because Sonny just totally broke down and started crying, I'm like, oh, God, what if Uruguay scores, and then he's going to cry again? And like, I felt that was such, just like, I was getting, like, preemptive trauma just thinking about that.
Oh,
like,
my God, yeah. How
devastating it would be for him. I mean, forget about me, but for these players to be celebrating now only to have it taken away.
Yeah, now, and Sonny crying is sort of a meme right now, because after the Ghana game, he's crying because, you know, they lost. Mm-hmm. And the sense is that, like, they sort of blew the whole World Cup, right? Because everyone was saying sort of after that, like, oh, Korea's done, you know, they're not going to beat Portugal, or too many things have to break right for Korea to move on. So he's crying like in the middle of the field, and one of the Ghanaian coaches comes over and takes a selfie of himself with like Sonny right next to him, like bawling his eyes out.
I only recently saw that because I heard about that. I don't want to watch it because I was just like,
no,
that's gonna hurt.
So
too
like
much
Sonny
to watch
crying
it.
Like in like relief and like happiness or whatever or something, and then it could be the third time he cried if like they didn't make it through because Uruguay like scored a third goal. I mean,
yeah. So that's why I was like, oh God, no! For his sake, let you know. It's that snatching of hope is will be so viciously cruel. Okay, and I was watching it in like the Korean TV networks, and if it were the US, I don't know where it's like legally streaming in the US, whether it's like CBS or NBC Fox. Okay, I probably would have been able to use my friend's cable access to watch both games at the same time. But, you know, it doesn't work in Korea here because they have like the VPN stuff or the security things. So, you know, the regional differences. And I didn't really think to use the pirate streams I usually use. I guess it just didn't occur to me. We couldn't find like another channel that was broadcasting the Uruguay-Ghana game. So it's just focusing on like the Korean players and them kind of celebrating. And then actually they huddle up and they're like, telling each other like, oh, what's happening in the other game. Meanwhile, there's like no information about that I have about Ghana Uruguay except for me like refreshing the ESPN page.
That's right, yeah. The game cast.
And I'm like, I'm so scared that with each click it's gonna turn into 3-0.
From 2-3, yeah.
And I'm also have the Reddit game thread, but I'm also even more petrified because I click refresh and then it'll be like, oh God, no. And that's like the first post, and I'm gonna know that means Uruguay scored, because nobody wanted Uruguay to go through except Uruguayans. No. And that's a small country, and I'm sure the diaspora is not very big. So everybody did not want Uruguay to go through. So any expression of discontent in that thread, I know would have meant Uruguay scored another goal. And then the announcers, these fucking announcers, say something, there's a penalty shout in the other thing. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, don't tell me they got a fucking stoppage time penalty. Fuck that. And I'm so scared at this point. I'm not even refreshing anything.
I don't want to know.
Seriously, just being in the dark for those, I think it's probably only 3 to 5 minutes, was such a horrible experience. Because you just have no idea what's going on. And you're just petrified that the next refreshing screen will tell you your dreams that you just thought were achieved are over. And I'm just an observer.
We're not even on the team.
And I just did
or
not,
like affiliated with like South Korean soccer at all.
Yeah, and I just did not want those players to have to go through that. And then but then at a certain point, one of the station's camera operators zooms in on a smartphone that I think one of the players was or one of the fans was looking at, and I saw that the game was they were playing. So then at that point, I knew there was no penalty. I could breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
And then Ghana actually had a couple of decent attacks. And then there's a point where the Ghanaian goalkeeper is just like dribbling the ball, just like wasting time. And I thought that was such this is the beautiful part. Remember, like, if 2018 was a story of a very surprising Korean Mexican unity, because our very unlikely victory over Germany helped Mexico through on a day they lost badly to Sweden, and I'm sure people remember the celebrations between Mexicans and Koreans or Mexicans and random Asians they saw on the street, and it was just like one of the most just joyous and beautiful days that honestly like ever that I can imagine, just people just being happy together. This was Ghana kind of doing the same thing, except it was out of pure spite, which I thought made it even better. This wasn't about them going through. This wasn't about them helping an unexpected friend, like international friend, for like mutual positive development. It was actually to wreak vengeance on a hated enemy. And is that Ghana's like, you know, instead of, I don't know, maybe getting a consolation goal or you know, salvaging some kind of that kind of pride, we're just gonna drag Uruguay down with us. And obviously that was good for us, and I was so thankful when I saw them, you know, put in the time wasting substitutions, and you know, as I said, the goalie just kind of milking the clock, and I think Uruguay gets one final free kick. And that was just, you know, we've seen last minute free kicks go in. You know, you watch enough soccer, you see a lot of different things happen, and we've seen those kind of last minute things. And I was just like, dear God, you know, this would be just up there with one of the cruelest endings of all time. But I think the ball just goes straight to the goalkeeper. And at that point, I think we knew that it was over, and then it is over. And I mean, how did you feel? How were you watching it? What time was it playing in the US? I guess it would be in the afternoon.
I think it was in the morning.
Yeah, it was like 10 a.m., right? Yeah.
Yeah, I actually didn't watch it live because I kind of forgot, or I just was like doing other stuff. I know I'm a bad follower, but I know I was at work and I wasn't. I'm not able to like, I would have to do it on my phone because they block it like in the browsers and the computer. And so like for whatever reason, I was just busy that morning. So like, I didn't like follow it, but my wife is like, she was like, oh shit or something, you know, they scored. And I was like, oh, and I started following it. On ESPN, I was doing a similar thing that you were doing. You know, like just updating the game cast and everything.
Do your blood dry up with stress?
Yeah, I was just like nervous because I was like, "Oh, they scored," you know. But I was like hopeful because I just believe in the team. Like they had come back before, and like they just don't give up. And you know, so I was like, you know, it just won and it's so early. Like, we got tons of time. And I just sort of like kept following it and follow, you know, updating the game cast. And then I saw we scored. I was like, oh, we scored, you know, and then I was like, I went to the page and, you know, they have like the standings, right? So then, mm-hmm. I looked at the score of the other game and then I was doing all the math in my head. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I'm like, okay, if we win this game, we'll have 4 points and our goal differential will be this. And Uruguay's got to do this, but like we tied them. So like, what are the tiebreakers? So I was doing all that in my head. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, they can't score again. Mm-hmm. So I was just like nervous, nervously.
I figured all that out ahead of time. So that's why I knew, like, once Uruguay went up 2-0, it was like, it kind of felt like they had it. Cause it was like, you got two goals. Ghana's completely morally, devastated. They're going to win 3-0 at least. Right. So I'd already worked that out of my head, which is why when I saw, I saw some like, you know, Korean, like soccer, like streamer types, and they were like so happy when Hwang scored, but even they seemed a little confused. Like, oh, so what does this mean? What does it mean? I'm like, did you really not figure this out ahead of time? Like,
right. That's what I wonder. If you're going to be, yeah, if you're like, this is sort of like your job or hobby. Yeah.
Well, I was like kind of the extreme end where I was like barely celebrating, as I said, the Hwang goal. Cause I'm you know, the worst is possibly yet to come. Anyway, but yeah, so I was watching it at home, as I said, and I was really happy. I was like, you know, looking on Twitter and Reddit, just seeing what others were feeling and enjoying that moment. But it was weird in that my reaction, kind of like how at the start of the match was like, you know, no matter what happens, I'll be pretty happy. It was, I just remember like saying 2018, just being so deliriously overjoyed at what I thought was a miracle against Germany. This time around, even though, I mean, like, the Portugal B team, as I said, was not exactly the most motivated team. And it's, you know, we can't really say we beat the Bruno Fernandes lineup, you know. So,
no.
But I don't think it's quite that. I think it's because I've seen something like the 2018 win against Germany and so many other things. I think with watching sports, at least with me, you get to a point where you see so many kind of like these miraculous things happen that I think eventually they kind of start wearing out. For example, just earlier this year, when Sonny was competing for the Golden Boot, the last match of the Premier League season against Norwich, I went out to a bar to watch that. And it really felt like he was kind of going to fall short, but then he scored like 2 goals in the last like 15 to 20 minutes of the game. You know, you see things like that. As I said, the aforementioned World Cup match against Germany. Even something like, remember when Sonny didn't even have his military exemption and he went to play in the Asian Games?
That's right. Yeah. That's a big deal, actually.
In the semifinals, Korea was actually down against Uzbekistan with about maybe 10 minutes to go. And you know Hwang Ijo, the other striker? He's basically the guy that Cho Kyu-sung replaced. A lot of people hate on Hwang Ijo because he was never like the top player, but he's really in a bad stretch right now. I will never hate him in any way because he scored a hat-trick in that Uzbekistan match. Including like kind of like a very late equalizer to take the game into
extra time,
extra time. And I believe Hwang scored the winning penalty in that match. Hwang also scored the winning goal in against Japan in the final. So, you know, Hwang has really saved Sonny many times. Just something that seems to happen a lot. Anyway, so Hwang Ijo will always have a place in my heart for how he stepped up in that match and in several other matches. He may be kind of on the decline now. But anyway, yeah, it was a strange sense of, I've seen enough of these that while I'm very happy, it's no longer that weird to see it happen. And also, I think,
right,
and you know, I don't want to be a downer on this, but it's kind of like, this is not going to, in the end, solve major problems, whether it's your own personal like happiness or greater national or international things. It certainly feels great, but it's all fleeting. That sounds probably kind of weirdly dark.
But I think the lasting thing is maybe sort of a connection to other people that you might build through your fandom and through these events. It's not like the event itself is going to do anything. It's sort of just the fact that you are a fan and that you're connected to like that sort of group of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's lasting. But the happiness itself is not going to like, it's not life changing.
Right, right. And, you know, I'm still like kind of amazed, maybe even a little dismayed in a way that, you know, I saw so many people actually crying or saying they cried when they saw this, you know, online. And, you know, I've seen footage of it as well. But I don't know. I'm very happy, especially for Sonny, because, you know, he's had this burden of being a so-called underachiever on the national team, which is like so true. I mean, I don't watch Belgium a lot. You know, rest in peace also Belgium, but I heard like Kevin De Bruyne is considered like
he's the best midfielder in the world,
right? I mean, but apparently he's attacked as being an underachiever on the national team. So if even like the best midfielder in the world is attacked like that on a loaded team, or at least more so in past years, well, you know, like Son Heung-min he's so head and above any other player, especially attacker on the Korean team. And of course he's not going to play as well as he plays on Tottenham, which is very much tailored specifically to maximize his skills.
And that's always the big difference between these national teams and the club teams, is that the talent level is just so much lower on the national teams.
They just don't fit well together.
Right. Or they don't fit well, or whatever it is, right? Or both in the worst case scenario. So the players that might be your best player, they're not going to necessarily do well because they don't fit in the system.
Yeah, so. Like a Paul Pogba is a total freak, like a player who actually plays better for the national team than the club. And then again, he plays for France, which is pretty much the best team in the world.
Talk about loaded.
Yeah. So he's like the weird exception. Like most players play worse for the national team. So, but now, like no matter what happens against Brazil, nobody can take away the fact that he captained while injured, while playing with a broken face. He captained this team, which is like decent, but definitely not favored to get out of this group, which is also one of the toughest groups. And not only did he lead them out, he, you know, that side of him, like streaking down the field, the 90th minute in the black mask, taking on like 7 Portuguese players and pulling off the perfect nutmeg.
Perfect pass. I mean,
perfect pass.
Just.
And also, you know, give great credit to Hwang Hee-chan. I'm afraid his.
Oh my fucking! Oh my god! We should have scored there. Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, no worries. I think it's a little unfair for him that his role. I mean, he had to finish that thing. Like, I mean, Lukaku. Look at him. Like, it's not easy to finish off. Lukaku. I mean, Lukakovic, I thought was Lukakovic. The most just vicious insult, but. You know, even a pass that's perfect takes immense skill and composure to finish off. And that, I don't think, was an easy chance. Like, the ball was perfectly placed, but it wasn't like he had an empty net to shoot at. Interesting thing on this, totally random, but I heard an interview with Kulishevsky that he prefers when there's actually a goalkeeper. He doesn't like empty nets. Because empty nets is when you miss because you just overthink it. So in fact, maybe. Go ahead.
No, people will say that, like, let's say in basketball, right? Some people will say it's harder to shoot that, like, to knock down a completely open 3-pointer than when there's like a defender closing you out. Mm-hmm. People will say that too.
Yeah, it just makes you more nervous, you know. I guess you're just like not used to it, kind of, because you generally as a if you're trying to score, you expect there to at least be somebody between you and you're trying to figure out how to beat him. Whereas it's an empty net, like, oh, what the hell? But anyway, Huang, just like, he had every excuse in the world to be like, oh, I'm rusty. You know, you should have played me earlier. And like, if he missed, be like, ah, you know, it's like, I've only been on the field for like 50 minutes. What do you expect? But just, you know, he finished out like he's fucking Erling Haaland or something. It's just incredible. and
he had the like sprint.
Yes, yes, like, yes. He was like way behind.
Like the full field. Like right. It was crazy.
Sonny, he has that moment now. It is his kind of like, you know, Park Ji-sung scoring against Portugal or Greece. This is up there, if not above it. And I think he's firmly established himself as unquestionably now. Like, I hate the fucking like Park Ji-sung like hipsters who are like, oh, but he's won more trophies. Like, okay, I'm sure we've talked about this before, but yeah, as a squad player, like I love Park Ji-sung, but like, God damn it! Like, you cannot compare that. And I guess the one thing they could legitimately hold, like Park Ji-sung was kind of like the heart and soul of a lot of those, you know, Korean teams that did best in the World Cup, the 2002 and 2010 teams. But now Sonny has his claim to do that. Remember his interview with Park Ji-sung? I think it was last year where Park is like telling him like, "You passed me a long time ago," and Sonny's like, "Oh no, I haven't." And some might say, "Yeah, that's kind of like typical Korean fake deference or whatever to your elder." But I think Sonny deep down believed it, because I know a handful, you know, quite a few of Korean soccer fans believe it. So, but now I don't think you can say that anymore. You gotta be crazy. You gotta be trying to be a contrarian to say that.
Yeah, I mean, just on like individual quality alone.
I mean, that was settled a long time ago. But in terms of, okay, maybe at the club level he hasn't done as well. But you know, you guys say, you know, he did make a Champions League final. He's a, you know, Golden Boot winner, which is in a way also kind of like a team award. You know, who knows what he'll accomplish at the club level in the next like five-ish years that he probably has left in his career. But definitely at the international level, he has equaled anything that like Park has done, because yeah, the kind of responsibility he's had and all that. So
agreed.
You know,
agreed.
That I was really happy for, but yeah, I think it's just kind of a maturation process, you know, as a person, not tying so much of your own personal kind of happiness to essentially entertainment. Sports is entertainment. And I think this goes to like a wider thing about, say, like media representation. Just kind of weaning yourself off of that, being like, you know, the whatever things you're hoping to vicariously feel or accomplish through these things, there are things that you can do that's more affects your real life in a more tangible way than these spectacles. Which is not to say I pretty much spent like all of today just going through Twitter and just reliving the moment. So I'm not saying I haven't thoroughly enjoyed it, but it's not the same thing. And I want to address another point. Cause like for a long time, you know, there's like a lot of people say like a 2002 World Cup was like unfair or rigged or all that. And for a long time, I took that really personally, because it felt like, because I had attached a lot of kind of personal, a sense of like kind of personal self-worth to how the Korean team had done in 2002, especially because all the big things they'd done were against European teams.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think it would have been different if it were against like Brazil or something. Because you know what? It's not like, you know, Brazilians don't like run America, or like, you know, people who look like Brazilians. You know, it's basically like, you know, European people who do it.
Right, right.
And you grow up in like America or Canada, and you do have that chip on your shoulder. And 2002 was a big fuck you to kind of that. And for people to try to discredit it, saying, oh, it was only because of, you know, this. I will say, you know, Korea beating Spain, I thought that was weird. Even when I was watching it, like, I remember not even celebrating that much. I'm like, I think Spain should have won that. I think at least one of their two goals that were called off were good. But I, you know, I definitely thought our win against Italy, you know, despite like maybe that yellow card shouldn't have been given, but hey, the game was almost over. You only had like the second half of an extra time. Italy still could easily defend it. It happens a lot. You know, you go man down, but you can hold
off. That's it. That's the Italian way.
Well, yeah, the more significantly,
go up a goal and defend.
Yeah, the significantly less talented team, you can defend for 15 minutes. Not the biggest deal. And there was like some bullshit about how Italy had like a goal taken away. It's like, yeah, well, the play was whistled offside, and that guy Tomasi, he just kept playing and scored in an empty net when the goalkeeper had stopped playing. And they called that a disallowed goal. That's like saying Korea had a disallowed goal against Portugal, and that was unfair. It's like, no, it was called offside, and it was like.
Yep.
And I remember the offside call against in Italy. I've seen replays of it. It was like pretty close, and it's like it wasn't a like blatantly unfair decision. You could maybe say it could have been 50-50, but we see that all the time. And I thought it was just people saying no, like an Asian team, especially like a in men's in a popular men's like sport that's not like some weird niche sport like. I don't know, ballroom dancing or something in a top tier glamour sport like soccer. There's no way that like an Asian team can.
Oh, that would beat, yeah. I mean, there was a big element of that, right?
Yeah, a European team.
That was definitely a big element of that.
Yeah, and I think, but then I see how so many people are now happy. Like when Japan beat Germany, I just saw so many people just celebrating. Even when like Korea beat Germany. Everyone was celebrating that. And I think a big part of that is that in the 20-year span, like back in 2002, like I remember it being a big deal that like An Jung-won was a bench warmer for like a bottom half Serie A team. You know, that was like that was like a glory boy on our team. And so obviously I think at that time the prospect of losing to an Asian team when, you know, Asian players, the best Asian player,
was a bench warmer on
like a third tier team, albeit at the highest league, in a European league, to now where you have Asian players winning golden boots, you have, Asian players being best players on teams that win like league titles. I'm thinking of someone like Shinji Kagawa, you know, arguably the best player on Dortmund during the height of those Klopp Dortmund years. People have just gotten used to now, I think, seeing Asian players and teams more as equal, so that it actually doesn't offend them at like a deep core level. Even when like Japan kind of wins on somewhat controversial terms, like against Spain. I mean, I think also it helps that the ball was clearly in when you saw the right replays.
Oh, but it still, was in.
Yeah. And I think something that was really indicative was apparently ITV or whatever, which is apparently a British station that was showing the game. They were like, this guy, Graham Souness, I think that's how you pronounce the name. This is like old dude and a bunch of other, I think, older like pundit types. They were like incensed. They thought that that goal shouldn't have counted. And I thought these are probably the people who would have been setting the tone of what happened in like 2002. And 2002 was still like pre, I mean, the internet was around, but it's like pre-internet as we know it. I don't know how many people actually watched the game. I think people just hear stories about what happened in that tournament, especially in like Korea-Italy and Korea-Spain matches, or the Korea-Italy match, I think, for whatever reason, seems to piss people off the most. And I think that the narrative was set on that, and it will never get changed because it's just too late for that to change. Everyone would have to kind of collectively erase their memory and watch the game start to finish. But it was hearing the stuff from the ITV people, like, yeah, those are the people who are probably setting the discussion and the conclusions. And it's become hard-baked in 20 years. And it will never change. But you know what? I don't care anymore because, as you said, these things have happened. Like, Korea making the last 16 this time around, beating Germany last time, Sonny winning the Golden Boot,
been a lot of progress,
a lot
right?
of progress.
So like our expectations and our all that stuff is elevated now. So like because that's I think the mindset of the fans needs to change too, where we can't be completely like just dumbfounded and like delirious with happiness that we beat these teams. like, we can be happy, but we should expect that we're competitive.
Yeah, and I think in the next...
the level where we can beat them, and that should be, like, seen as, oh, okay, yeah, we beat them. That's always been a possibility.
Yeah, and I think, especially seeing Japan do it against a Germany side that was clearly trying to win, because it's like the first round of group stages. And I guess, and I heard some of the ridiculous conspiracy theories about, oh, Spain actually won its second place, because I think in the match before, you know, on the same day, but before them, turned out Morocco, if they had been second, they would face Morocco. Firstly, I would probably think Morocco is actually the better team compared to Croatia. Like, you would only be afraid of Croatia based on their heritage. And I don't mean that in a racial way, but the fact that they were finalists 4 years ago, and, you know, in 98, they were third place finishers. Morocco, I think, has made it to the second in the knockout round in their history, but I don't think recently. But I would be more worried.
They're probably the most surprising group winner, I would say.
No, I would say Japan is. Considering the strength. Okay. Considering the strength of
that's true, because Morocco has some really good players like Ziyech.
And Morocco was really good 4 years ago. I think they almost beat Spain or Portugal. I forget which one. But they were in the same group. And people thought they were probably the best team that didn't make the round of 16.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
So
that's me making assumptions on the strength of teams based on their history.
So just
sorry, Morocco.
So and Morocco beat Belgium, whereas Croatia should have lost. If Lukakovic scores any of his four chances, you know, Croatia loses.
Oh my God. I hate Lukaku so much. He is just the biggest. He is like, he gets paid the most money and has like this reputation of being this goal scorer, because he's had a couple of stints in like out of the Premier League, right? And like, he goes out of the Premiership into like other leagues, and he just like scores all these goals, and everyone's like, oh my God, he's the best. And then like, with any actual defenders, like, he can't score.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he is actually Belgium's leading scorer. He just tends to do it against minnows or
He can't actually like score when it matters.
Yeah, but anyway, so Morocco, and not only that, but people are saying, oh, they'll avoid Brazil, but I'm like, Brazil is in an injury crisis right now. Neymar, I kind of don't think is going to come back, and if he is, even if he is, he's going to be very hobbled. Gabriel Jesus is out. I mean, he wasn't probably going to play anyway, but hey, if something happens to Richarlison, God forbid, his backup is out. Apparently, they don't have a left back. They might have to play old man Danny Alves, which...
Oh, my
God. Which is getting me to maybe hope maybe Korea can pull off, like, arguably the greatest upset of all time if we can knock off the number one team in the world right now, right? Brazil's number one, right?
Yeah, because they haven't lost. They lost against... who was it? Cameroon?
Oh, yeah, but that was
their... Not Cameroon.
They didn't lose to Cameroon, yeah.
Yeah, so they lost that game. I think it was the first like international loss in like a few years.
Oh, really? Okay.
And or something like that. Anyway. Something crazy. Yeah. I mean, it was the Brazil B team, but like, Brazil is so crazy deep that mm-hmm. you just expect them to beat a Cameroon team, right?
Yeah.
But like, for some reason, I'm just not afraid of Brazil at the World Cups at all. Like,
I get you. Yeah,
they just don't play well, or like they don't play up to what you would expect them to, especially since they're the most winning, you know, nation in the world, in the world at World Cups at five. They just haven't been scary,
honestly, since 2002. There hasn't, like, you know, 2006, I remember them losing to, who did they lose to? Was it France? Yeah, I think it was France. Mm. That was when Zidane was on his, like, you know, one-man shows run.
That's right, yeah.
2010, they lose to... I forget. 2014, they lost to... I forget. But, you know, they kind of go out in the quarters, maybe the semis. I think they lost to Belgium in 2018 in the quarters.
Oh, that was they kinda... might have, for some reason, I think they lost to Croatia, like, in 2018, right, or something?
No, maybe. They lost to Belgium in 2018.
Belgium, okay.
And then Belgium went on to lose to France, I think, in the semis. So Brazil only made it to the quarters. Right. Obviously, in 2014, they lost to Germany. Fucking.
Oh, that's right.
And then 2010,
Germany, they also, you know, ended up winning, but.
Yeah. so yeah, Brazil just like when people said they were the favorites, I'm like, based on what? I mean, I think it's closely tied to Neymar, because like Neymar, as great as he is, has never really seemed like the best player at any point in his career. And I think Brazil, he personifies Brazil. Like, yeah, loaded with talent, but they just don't scare you. Like, not that I've, you know, Tottenham never really had to face like a Neymar team, I think. But I just think of Neymar, I'm like, it doesn't feel, he's very flashy and he's incredibly talented, but it just doesn't strike me as just like a winner.
There's no killer instinct, right? Like, I just don't get the sense that they're going to come out and really bring it, like, play up to their level and just run you off the field.
Yeah.
Some teams that you think, you know,
they won 5-1. So you will watch them win like that again. But you know what? I think Korea will be in the spotlight. Like, I remember last time we were in the group stages against Uruguay in 2010. Nobody was watching that. Like, nobody cared about Uruguay in 2010. At least until they, you know, play Ghana. But so I think Brazil versus Korea will be a match that a lot of neutrals, I think, will see, and let's show them what we got. And even if we lose like 4-0 or whatever, hopefully we play well, and maybe we'll score a goal or two even, and somebody will make their name. Maybe like Cho Gyu-sung will become like a goal scorer leader of World Cup history in Korea. He's already got two, first Korean player to score a brace in a game. He just needs one more. He'll be tied with Son Heung-min and An Jung-won and Park Ji-sung, this guy. Why don't we talk about Cho Gyu-sung? I think his story is incredible. This is what I was willing to take. If Korea did not make it out of the knockout stages, I was going to say, you know what? At least Korea accomplished by having the hottest guy at the World Cup. That is an immense accomplishment. That's almost better than making it to the to the knockout stages. And you know, I was talking about this with Steve ever since the World Cup started. And I'm sure you feel the same way. Like, whenever like the World Cup rolls around, like Cosmo or any of these or like Jezebel or any of these websites. Well, maybe not Jezebel, but you know what I'm talking about. They'll be like, oh, you know, World Cup hotties list. And they'll have, it'll always be usually some guy from Western Europe, usually like Spain or Italy. We can all agree, like, English players tend to be pretty ugly. So, David Beckham, forget about him. But
notwithstanding, yeah.
But it'll always be, you know, from the one of the wealthier European countries. Or maybe like a very white looking Argentinian. They're all white, but you know what I'm saying. It won't be like
lighter skin, like Central American or South American.
If it's a South American, it won't be like a black or, like Amerindian type of guy. And sometimes they'll have like a hot guy from like every country. By the time they get to the Asian and also like African country, you can tell they're like not even trying. They're just picking a random person. They never went far as saying Park Ji-sung was like the hottest Korean player. I think even they had some standards, but it's like that level of we don't care. Like whether you're like a good looking Asian guy or ugly guy, you're all the same to us. You're like ineligible, irrelevant. We'll focus on other teams. So I thought it was so funny that this guy whom I only sort of knew of because I would just check like periodically the Korean national team just to see who was playing the friendlies, because I wanted to know who would be likely to make in the matchup. So I saw this guy, and then he didn't particularly strike me as noteworthy in the sense of talent level. I think he was a K-League leading scorer, but hey, Yidong-gu was frequently the K-League leading scorer. And he infamously underperformed at the highest international levels. And I thought, this is like a pretty good looking dude, but you know what? Like, nobody outside of like Asia is probably really going to care, because that's just how I understood things to be. So when when we were playing Uruguay, I was just like on Twitter and stuff, I saw like these tweets about him. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then it kind of like just blew up from there. Kind of became this like viral sensation. And I thought it was such a stark reminder of how like things, like just a culture is changing. Even from like 4 years ago, this wouldn't have happened 4 years ago in 2018. But in 2022, I'm sure in a big part due to Army, you know, they lifted this hitherto unknown Asian dude into. Yeah, I saw it like
the player nine.
Yeah, player nine. what's nine in Spanish? My God, my high school Spanish totally.
Oh my God,
what comes after Ocho?
I did not take Spanish.
Nueve. Ocho, nueve. Okay, nueve de Corea. Right, that was like trending on a lot of Spanish language Twitter after.
I have to give my wife props for calling that. So what like we're watching the Uruguay or watching another game and. Uh-huh. And she was like going through and or she was on like the social media or she saw the guy and she's like, oh, the internet, you know, the Korean internet is going to love this guy. And she was totally right.
Well, but the thing is that Koreans already knew of him. And I think, well, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know how like the K-League is popular, but I'm pretty sure, like, women are women, you know, I'm sure like Korean women knew of this guy, but obviously the rest of the world didn't because he's a K-League player and nobody knows that. So, but it was funny that she just knew, okay, yeah, he's got it. He's got the it factor.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right.
So that was, I think that's like a thing. I guess that's something that's new. As I said, these big wins by Asian teams over stronger teams. At this point, even before Korea's win over Portugal or even Japan over Spain, I mean, you know, Korea over Germany, Japan over Germany, it's something new. But this Shogyo-san thing is actually something new, which is why I find it so entertaining. And I think, as I said, I was willing to take that win if it was the only win we could get from this.
But it's still more important in your mind than the win on the field.
No, I'm not saying that.
No, I'm kidding,
But I was going to say...
I'm joking.
But actually... I mean, yeah. But I was willing to salvage it as... and then try to...
As a win, yeah.
As copium, try to say, you know what?
Right.
We may not have actually literally won a match in this tournament. But we won something, actually.
We won the hotness contest.
Yeah, we won the hotness contest, which is no small thing.
But, you know, it to go back to, like, sort of talking about how you can't really put too much of, like, your own personal worth and energy into these wins of, like, strangers, you know? They're not really, you know. It was... I don't know whether I was like, I had a weird reaction to, so when Japan beat Germany, right?
Mm-hmm.
They cut, like when they scored that goal, they cut to like this fan in the stands, like this Japanese man. And he's sort of like probably middle-aged and he's like frumpy looking, but he's wearing like the, you know, their blue jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And he is just, he's like bawling his eyes out.
Yeah.
And he's like crying and like the camera just, and he's like on worldwide TV because they cut right to him and he's the only, he takes up the whole screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, like it really meant that much to him. And I was like, oh, it's kind of touching, but I'm like, wow. It's also a little embarrassing. It's just a literally cry, you know? But it's just interesting because it does mean that much to a lot of people.
Yeah. I wouldn't personally think it'd be embarrassed, but I would be like, why? I mean, I think I'm someone who cares a lot about soccer and attaches a lot of meaning to it beyond just it's a game. It is something that represents the collective spirit and will of a people. I do believe that. But I don't know if I'd ever cry even at the height of my belief in that. So like to be that emotional over it, you must be quite invested in it.
Very. And if Korea or like the US wins the World Cup, that's closer to me to being like that emotional. Mm-hmm. But just to like qualify or like win a game against like, you know, historically strong side. That's mm-hmm. that doesn't move the needle in terms of like crying emotions.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not to say, you know, I as I said, I saw a lot of people kind of like our, you know, people our age and all that crying. And I'm so happy.
We got one back.
Oh, cool.
We got one back.
Who scored?
Haji Wright, of all people.
I have no idea who that is. Hey, that sets up for a great finish. So why don't we wrap this up soon so you can focus totally.
Oh, we got 15 minutes to tie it up.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
my God.
Maybe I'll go watch it as well. Okay, let's get any last thoughts we have about this World Cup. I honestly think it's been the best World Cup I've seen so far. I really like 2018. The problem with 2018 was that after the round of 16, it got pretty predictable. I remember the group stages being amazing. But then I think once it became pretty clear France was unstoppable, there just weren't a lot of memorable knockout matches. I think the closest one was the Japan-Belgium match because of the... See, that one always... That, I think I could find... I will say for 4 years, I could not watch replays of that because it was so just like heartbreaking how Japan almost had pulled off the upset against Belgium but lost it in like the last 20-ish minutes. Now I can go back and watch it because like Japan has, I think, redeemed itself by emerging out of the group of death. But so yeah, so I still do have those kinds of like personal hang-ups attached to these things. But as I said, now that these things have happened, I can now go back and easily watch them. Kind of like how I thought I wouldn't be able to watch the Korea-Ghana highlights for at least several months. But once, actually after a few days, I was able to watch it again. And I think that kind of like sensitivity lessens with just...
Agreed.
Asian experience. But so 2018, I really enjoyed the group stages. And I really loved Croatia's run. But I think the problem with that was everyone kind of knew France was going to win the final. That was like not really a close match before even it started, the conception. And the game match itself, I think, proved to be... I mean, I think the score actually flattered France a little. Actually, I think it kind of flattered Croatia because like one of their goals was a total fluke at the end when Lloris just gifted Mandzukic a goal. But and then 2014, I thought the problem with 2014, I thought, was that Korea didn't do well, so that always soured the 2014 tournament. I mean, actually, I think that was the most pathetic thing I've seen a Korean national team. The last round of matches against Belgium. When Belgium got a red card in like the 20-something minute, and they still won.
Yeah.
And you know who scored the game-winning goal for them? It was Jan Vertonghen.
No, I remember.
It was Jan Vertonghen.
Oh, Vertonghen.
A defender.
A defender. Like, and not known for even being like an offensive defender.
Not known for being an offensive defender. Scores a goal, a man down. And it never actually felt like we had the man advantage. And I thought... And I actually felt the dread.
That's always the most pathetic. You go up a man and you still get dominated. That's always the most humiliating.
And when we got that red card and when we got the extra man, I was thinking, oh God, now we got to win this or get humiliated.
That's true. That does put pressure on the team.
And then not only did we not win, we also lost. And that was so just, that's why my expectations going to 2018 were so low that I wasn't even that upset when we lost against. Was it Sweden in the opener? I'm like, well, I don't even know if I watched that game. I'm like, well, that's what you expect, right? Anyway, so 2010, I just like did not enjoy watching that Spain team at all. I thought they're incredibly boring. As much
Tiki-Taka is a hard style of soccer to watch for people, even the most ardent fan.
Look, I love the 2008 Spain Euro team. Probably my favorite non-Korean team just to watch. You know, they were just so much fun. They had the hunger because they never won a major title before.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this was like their golden generation, right?
Well, this was like the cusp of the golden generation.
Right.
They hadn't, like, I think Busquets and like Xabi Alonso hadn't been on that team yet, or it was a team, you know, you got Xavi, you got Iniesta, you got Torres, you got David Villa.
They really hadn't come into their own yet. Like their reputations weren't as high.
Yeah, yeah. They were still known as like Dutch chokers. Puyol, PK, like, yeah, and obviously, yeah, Casillas. Yeah. Like those guys were on the team, but they still hadn't won anything as a nation yet. So people were still doubting them, and they just played with such fire and hunger. I always admire them. But in 2010 Spain, oh, dreadful to watch.
Fuck.
Oh, no. Why? Netherlands scored?
Yes. 3-1 now. Okay. Fuck it. It's over now.
Yeah.
It's only 10 minutes left.
I'm sorry.
Fucking hell.
So 2010, I liked because Korea and Japan did well, made both to the knockout phase. And honestly, I kind of miss the Vuvuzelas. Not actually, I don't want them to come back, but when I hear them, they are such
nostalgia,
the signature sound.
Yeah.
Plus, that was like the summer after I graduated college. So, you know, that's like a very distinct time in my memory. Oh, 2006. I hated the 2006 World Cup. Just it's fucking Italy won it. That left a sour taste in my mouth. And Korea did badly. Well, we didn't do that badly. We did beat Togo and drew France. But there were no real inspiring moments from that team. Like, it was like a weird team in that a lot of 2002 players had retired or were kind of past their prime, but the newer generation hadn't really been hadn't really come up yet. So it was this in between team, and I just remember it was like that kind of like horrible fashion era, the mid 2000s, when a lot of Asian guys would kind of grow their hair out. So everyone on the team had this like kind of mop top look. Oh, it was terrible. And yeah, that's what I mean, these ugly jerseys with it was like
this, that was like a weird era of jerseys. Yeah.
It was this kind of like hot red with navy blue plastic print. I don't know. It was just terrible. It was just not a good look. It was not a good look. I actually don't think our jerseys this time are that great. I wish we wore those white tiger stripe ones. Those look so cool. I don't know why we got...
Well, yeah, but I think like the cut or like just the fit of the jerseys were really bad just overall in that era. Now, though, you know, they're like fitted and...
Yeah,
you just complained about the pattern, but yeah like
so. And then 2002, I greatly enjoyed, but I was also like just getting into soccer then, so I didn't know what was going on. So what do you think about this World Cup? Like, would you also say that it's your favorite? I mean, you don't have to agree with me, but I mean, I would say it's my favorite.
I don't know if I have like a favorite one or a non-favorite one. I think it's probably of the last few, right? So from like 2014, 2018, 2022, it's the most enjoyable for me. So I've had the most fun like watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I like upsets, right? And I also like seeing the big European teams lose. I like seeing them lose because of their arrogance. And, it's always fun to see the, you know, the favorites lose, right? Like, you want the underdogs to win. And, you know, I just, yeah. So, like, I've had a lot of fun because it's just the games have been tense. There haven't been a lot of, like, real blowouts, right? Other than, obviously, like, you know, Spain beating Costa Rica 7-0 to start their tournament. Mm-hmm. But, like, certain teams, like, even Spain, right? You thought that they were going to just blow through the whole tournament on that start. But they haven't, right? I mean, they're still probably going to do really well, but they just haven't sort of lived up to their beginning. And other teams have shown a lot of heart and grit and come back, and like a lot of highs and lows in terms of emotions.
Yeah.
It's been a really fun tournament to watch. So yeah. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. Like, as I said, like going to the last day, it seemed like every group had some kind of crazy outcome. I mean, I think there were some groups that were fairly boring. I think the group B, America's group, was actually one of the more tame ones. Like, yeah, England was clearly the best team. And I didn't watch the USA versus Iran match, but it seemed like it wasn't full of that much drama, except for, you know, relatively late goal by, you know, the United States. But it wasn't like, there wasn't like some crazy permutation where Wales is clearly the worst team in the group, so I think that kind of made it clear. So the only real contest
was yeah.
USA and Iran. Oh, Group A was obviously pretty boring, the Qatar group. It seemed like yeah. every group had some kind of craziness going on in the last day, which is great.
And there was something to play for, right? Something yeah. not like set.
Yeah, every team, and not just yeah. like the teams fighting for second. Like even the first place teams had something at risk.
Right, right.
And also like the Asian teams doing well is just another thing that will, you know, make this my favorite World Cup. And a kind of spiteful part of me kind of, like, we know all the horror stories about, you know, Qatar and all the, you know, the
oh, that's the, horrible too. I mean, that's yeah. despite the whole,
yeah.
just,
and that's bad, yeah. but just the very sanctimonious ways that like countries like Germany and to their credit, I think the US has been less so with this, but you know what I'm talking about, right? The Germans with yeah. their stupid hand over mouth protest, which is hilarious because it looked like I don't know, it's just not a very let's just say it's not a very masculine look to be looking like you're gasping in I don't, that's what they look like, right? They were like, oh my god, like it had that kind of
yeah,
look.
Yeah.
It was not very intimidating, you know, and soccer you want to come off as intimidating, you know, and
it wasn't the most hardcore protest.
Yeah, it wasn't, let's say it wasn't the haka, it wasn't the All Blacks,
no,
the
haka. No.
And you know, stuff like that. And I think the English media, British media has been very sanctimonious as well, but apparently the ratings have been through the roof and a play of quality, I think it's unanimously been praised. Although people unanimously praised the Russia group stages, and then the second half of the tournament wasn't as exciting. So we'll see what happens. But I think definitely my favorite World Cup.
Yeah, no, it's been fun, man. So
okay,
yeah, I'm glad we could talk about it. And
yeah. And I will soon, you know, be back like, in the U.S.
That's right, and you're gonna pod about your whole trip. I'm excited to hear that too.
Yeah, and yeah, listeners, I've been kind of off the pod in the last maybe even a couple of months. We, you know, it just, you know, we just have like other things to, you know, like going on. I don't mean like in a bad personal way. I'm just being like, you know, busy with other projects and things like that. So you know, happy to be back on, and I definitely do want to pod about my trip here. It's made me think about a lot of things. And actually,
I want to see a lot of pictures too. I'm sure you took pictures.
Yeah, I mean, not a ton of pictures, but I did fill up a film roll. So hopefully those turned out well. You can catch me later on a pod where I'll talk about, you know, going back. And yeah, because it's been like 4 years since I'd seen my parents or been to Korea, really. So a lot of time to think about things and all of that. Okay, maybe we can sign off here. There is
right.
the 88th minute. Maybe the U.S. can pull off a miraculous comeback. Maybe stopping this pod will bring some good mojo to them.
All right. I don't, you know, we have to believe in everything and all that jazz, but it would be the miracle of all miracles.
Yep. All right. Okay, good talking to you, Adam. I will be back in New York very soon. Looking forward to coming home.
Good talking to you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.